show.
That's legit.
Well, all right, so we're talking just momentarily, just briefly here about Dave & Buster's, which they're not a sponsor as far as I know. Do you know, Robert?
No, they're not a sponsor.
I doubt if Dave & Buster's is a sponsor at this particular point, since you're...
Yes, you said you're leaving the radio platform.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't know. Maybe Dave & Buster's was a long-time sponsor. I'm not saying that they sign up as an advertiser.
Well, they're not going to sign up now.
No, I know that. I'm saying...
I'm saying they're not going to sign up now on account of going off of the platform.
I understand what he's saying, but I know about the radio business terms.
So you're conversant with them?
Yes, I know all about... Phil will sit there and say, oh, this is a microphone. I know what the microphone is, and I know the volume knob, right?
The pot.
The what?
Talk about a pot.
I don't understand. I know radio terms. I don't need to be. And you said that Dave & Buster's was going to buy a spot. Isn't that what that, a spot? Right, Phil?
Okay, Mark, don't yell at me, Margaret.
Well, is the term right, a spot?
Yeah, yes, it's a spot. And I didn't say...
Why are you yelling?
Why are you yelling?
Well, I want to be understood.
No, I didn't say that Dave & Buster's is buying a spot. I'm just talking about Dave & Buster's. I have nothing to do with advertising at all.
I don't think he was talking about advertising so much as he was talking about that you like Dave & Buster's, and they've got too many kids crawling through that place, and I agree with Phil.
They have too many what?
There's too many kids at Dave & Buster's. I'm not complaining, Dave & Buster's. Although, because I ain't been to a Dave & Buster's in a long time. But Dave & Buster's, when I first went there, and the reason why it attracted so many adults, I think, is because it was marketed as a place for adults. It was, in other words, a gaming center, a video game and virtual game and sports bar game and every kind of a game, plus the extra added attraction of females.
Yeah, they have women. They're not going to have that at Cheesy Chuck or anything.
Why do you call it Cheesy Chuck? It's what is it called, Phil?
Chuck E. Cheese.
Yes, I used to take Jason J. Delmonico. So this one here is calling it Cheese.
I thought it was Cheese Chuck.
Cheese Chuck? No, man. Boy, I'll tell you, of all the diseases that this radio show suffers from, one of the biggies is, can we get a name right around here? No. Chuck E. Cheese turns into Cheese Chuck.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, though.
It is.
What is the name of it?
It's Margaret, you're the mother of a young son.
I haven't taken him there in years.
Chuck E. Cheese. Now, that's a place for kids. Dave & Buster's is an adult version of that. And the thing they used to say was very simply, oh, you know, the great thing about it is we don't let any kids in here after a certain time. And I forget what it was.
I think it's like 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock? You sure?
Not really, but I mean, you know.
They cut it off.
Well, what do you mean they cut it off?
The time.
Oh.
The time. They cut the time. They cut off the time that kids are allowed in. So after a certain time in the evening, 7 or 8, no kids, man. No. And guess what? It turns into a really fun place. I'm not saying that, you know, I like kids. And if you're a parent, you entertain your kids. But you do want to go somewhere where maybe you can have a couple of laughs and there aren't kids everywhere. And that's what Dave & Buster's was. Now I'm hearing, what are you hearing, Bud?
Now, a friend of mine went over there just the other day and saw a kid hanging around like, this stinks. And just got into his car and just burned rubber out of the lot. And then he got a ticket because he's so pissed.
Wait a minute. A friend of yours got so pissed off he left... Burning rubber.
Yeah, went on a cheese over at Dave & Cheese. Not Dave & Cheese, but
it's you called it Chuck E. Cheese.
This is not Chuck E. Cheese.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dave & Buster's.
Yeah, Dave & Buster. And so he saw a kid, and he went, "What? What's the story?" And just went back out to his car and peeled out.
He just saw a kid there?
Yeah, you're not supposed to see none.
Well, man, that doesn't mean you can see a kid, man. It doesn't mean a kid's going to get to stay there.
What is it? What, are they allowed in or are they not?
I don't think kids are allowed in there at all. I don't even... After a certain hour, you can't... No kid is allowed in the place, even if they're with an adult. Even if they're with an adult. If you're 18 or over, then you get in, okay?
Oh, 18 or older. And the drinking age, though, is what? Isn't it 21?
Well, yeah, but I mean, you're not going to penalize someone. Look, an 18-year-old is majority age. You can get sued. You can get arrested. You can move out. You can get a bank loan, as far as I know. You can do everything. You can join the military. The idea that you can't drink, I don't know. You know, that's one between the citizenry and its elected legislature.
Yay.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right, we're going to talk here tonight. I don't want to move us past the Dave and Buster thing, but I don't want to, you know, is there anything else?
Well, I just don't understand. You saw a kid and then you peeled out?
No, a friend of mine.
His buddy.
Oh, I see. All right.
Yeah, because he didn't like seeing the kid.
No, he's so...
Well, hold on for a minute. You said, let's just break this down because, you know, I used to work for the military police. And if you have a problem or you have a situation, you want to break it down into its elements, into its evidentiary elements. All right?
Yes.
All right. Your friend... Oh, never mind.
Wait.
I'm bored with it already.
Oh, thank you very much, General. That's great.
What do you mean bored with it?
It bores me to tears. It bores me. It bores me to the point of having a loose stool.
Okay. So your friend pulled in, saw a kid.
Yeah, he got pissed off, peeled out, and then got a ticket. That's the whole part. I didn't care. He didn't care about peeling out, but somebody reported the peel out.
What does that mean, reported the peel out? Is that burning rubber?
Yeah, he burned rubber out of the lot. Boy, he must have been really pissed off.
Yeah, he wanted to have a beer, and he wanted to have a beer in peace and quiet.
I think I'll go over to Dave and Buster's and have a beer in peace and quiet.
Well, then why am I a little kid hanging around? Yeah, I didn't want to have a kid hanging around.
You know something? We should honor and appreciate our children. Children are the future of this country of ours. It's for the children that we do the things that we do.
Holy Christ.
I beg your pardon.
You know, when you start in, I'm not saying you, Margaret, but Phil, when I hear people start in about the children being the future, I know someone has grabbed that middle leg. Oh, forget it.
Watch it with the middle leg, okay? Because we're still very much on
we're on a terrestrial reality radio.
Yeah, the terrestriality radio. All right, so tonight we have the first news report coming in here to the Phil Hendry Brain Central News Talk Radio thing, whatever, is, you know, our interest in animals, not because I'm interested in endangered species, not because I'm interested in keeping the spotted owl alive, not because I'm interested in... I just don't like to see animals get treated poorly, and then I want to go and find the humans that did it and throw them into a cage with a cheetah or whatever animal has been abused. Now, in India, India's got these problems with leopards and stuff. What's the story with that?
I don't know. It's
well, now India does have the large cat.
Yeah, India's got. I've been seeing stories about India with these leopards and cheetahs. And, you know...
What's the other kind?
The other kind of what?
The other kind of what, a cat?
Yeah.
Leopards and cheetahs and tigers?
The other kind.
Lions?
No. No, what other kind?
What do you mean, what other kind? Leopards, cheetahs, panthers?
No.
Oh, well, you get out of here, man.
What are you thinking of, bud?
The other kind of... What kind of... I'm thinking the other kind of cat. You mean like just a regular house cat? Yeah, that's it. Did it?
Get out of here with the regular house cat. That ain't a wild animal. That's a domesticated animal.
What?
See, people don't understand the difference between the two, man. Domesticated, wild. One you can live around and pet and have in your lap and feed, and it looks at you and it says, hi, you're part of the family. And you say, uh-huh. And you give it the keys to the car, and it drives where it wants to go, and it helps pay the rent when you're out of town, and it watches the house, and the house sits. That's a domesticated animal. A wild animal will chew your face off. Thank you.
Hey. You've been Phil Hendry. Tell you about wild animal.
Exactly. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show with more on that story, which is, as I said, very bizarre. And also, R.I.P., Godspeed, a great man, a funny man, a great director, great creator, Harold Ramis passed on today at the age of 69, the director of Groundhog Day, just to name one. Phil Hendry Show.
If you see me walking down the streets, and that's that...
Hey, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You cleared your throat there with the mic on.
Did I really? I'm utterly just humiliated.
All right, Phil, don't be a smartass.
Margaret's just simply trying to help you clean things up around here.
That's okay. I appreciate it, Margaret. I do.
I thought that that's something you don't want to do.
No, you don't want to do it. Thank you very much. But you got Dr. George Havana from the Primate Center in Mississippi?
Yeah, this from Jackson, Mississippi at a primate.
Okay, that's great, and I appreciate that. But we're talking about leopards. We're not talking about monkeys here.
Yeah, well, that was the only guy that was available.
That was the only guy that was available, a monkey expert, and we're talking about a leopard.
Yeah.
See, do you guys understand the difference here?
Well,
my understanding was he was ready to go.
Okay, that's great. He's ready to go. Why not just call a plumber or something like that?
What?
Why would you call up a leopard expert? Why do you call a monkey guy?
Yeah, the guy, we called him up and said, I know you know about monkeys, but we need someone on the air right away.
Yeah. And he said, sure, I'm... And we said, we're going to talk about leopards. He goes, not a problem. So I said, that's fantastic.
Not a problem. Okay.
Well, Phil, if the man's willing to talk about leopards.
All right. Maybe does he know anything about leopards?
He does not, no.
Well, then what the hell have we got the guy on the air for, man?
Shh. He's on hold right now.
Phil, you don't want to... insult. Yeah, you don't want to insult the man. He's on hold right now, hearing you tear him a new ass. So
I'm not tearing him a new... All right, let me get on the phone here. Dr. George Havana here from Jackson, Mississippi this evening at the Primate Center. Dr. Havana, sir, thank you for being with us.
Well, good evening. Thank you.
Sir, I didn't mean to say, infer anything. Are you an expert on cats?
No, I'm not at all, but this very good young people called representing your program and asked if I would come on as an expert on leopards, and I said, of course.
And why would you do that if you're all about...
That I'm all about the primate?
Yeah.
Because they were asking, they said they needed someone at the last moment.
Do you know anything about leopards?
Only what I read in the newspaper and, you know.
What you read in the newspaper?
I'd be willing to take a shot at it, though.
Dr. Havanaugh, this is General Galen Shaw.
I'm sorry, what is your name, sir?
Yes, General Galen Shaw.
Your name is Galen Shaw, yeah?
Now, if we spoke to you about leopards and cheetahs and cats, have you any working knowledge of those wild animals?
None whatsoever, no.
All right.
Like I said, this guy called up, had a funny-sounding voice.
Well, I'm saying I got one.
Yeah, I told you on the phone a moment ago, sir. Is this Mr. Dickman?
Yeah.
I told you a moment ago on the phone, I said, your voice is goofy, and I've got to talk some more with this guy. Is it okay? You hold on.
What is it? What are we doing here? Are you on to talk about cats, leopards?
That's what he told me, and I'm willing to do that. But the thing that really held my interest was how brain dead this guy was, you know, and the fact that...
All right, thanks a lot.
Man, you can't hang up on the guy.
Why can't I hang up on the guy?
Yeah, let me get on the phone.
Yeah, you get on the phone and explain to him.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. Huh? Hello? He hung up.
You know, you guys must be mentally diseased or something, you know?
Look, Harry, you said you wanted to get a guy on real fast.
I didn't say get a guy that's a monkey expert to talk about cats.
Well, they did the best they could, Phil. I'm just...
Thank you very much, Joe, for sticking up for us.
I understand Phil's point to a point, but I'm not sure I'd get... I'm not sure I'd have, as the kids used to say, a cow over the whole thing.
You know what? If I can't explain to you why it's weird, if I ask for a guy that is an expert on cats and you bring me a monkey expert with the excuse, well, hey, the guy was available and he doesn't know anything about cats. I could even understand if the guy... What, Margaret?
Wait, just wrap it up a little bit.
Don't do that that pinwheel motion, okay?
We're trying to get you to wrap it up. Move it along.
All right, leopard injures 7 people. I'm telling you right now, and I'm...
Phil.
No, I have a right to say this. You guys have got to have some kind of a... I told you, I think you'd both need MRIs, man, for you to put a guy on the air who's an expert in monkeys to talk about cats. I know that I was in a hurry. I understand that I wanted to have a guy on right now. I understand that this and that. And you might as well have said to me, hey, Phil, we have on the phone here. Why are you getting up and walking out, bud?
I just want to get something to drink.
Don't walk out of here, man, when I'm talking to you.
Oh, sorry.
Where are you going?
Same thing. I thought you were talking to Bud.
I'm talking to all of you guys. Everyone, sit down.
Can I go to the toilet?
No, I'd rather that you stay where you are.
God!
Now take it easy, Phil. You're just starting the program. You want to do a staff meeting right here on the air?
No, that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, now, Oh, he's going to sulk.
Yeah, you're getting all sulky and everything.
No, no, it's fine. It's okay. It's fine. Go ahead. Go get water, or you got to go to the bathroom. Go ahead.
Well, you don't have to announce it to everyone.
You just did, okay? How you doing, General?
I'm fine. I'm worried about you.
Well, I'm fine. There's nothing wrong with me.
Well, you seem to be under a lot of pressure. What happened this weekend? I heard you telling the audience. What happened?
This weekend was tough, you know.
What happened?
Well, I couldn't sleep. I've had insomnia for four nights running until... last night, it was okay. So I should say four nights running. Last night, it got better.
Do you feel as if you're caught up on your sleep?
Yes, I feel like I caught up on my sleep this afternoon because I had to get up this morning, go to a meeting, got home, I was dead, I went to sleep, and that seemed to do it for me. But I was a dead man walking, you know.
So and I heard you talking to Nikki that you felt you were a mess, right? And you blew an audition out, right? You blew an audition to bits, and I shouldn't use the word blew. You blowed it, right?
It was not good, yeah. I don't care if you use the word blue, as long as it's in the right context.
Well, you said that I couldn't say Blue Allen.
I didn't want you... Is that the guy you know?
Yes.
I didn't want you using the guy because the guy's gay. You told me he moved in with some guy named Allen, and his nickname is Blue Allen. So his name is Walter Blue Allen.
Oh, I see what you... Okay, yeah. Well, but if you have a mind that goes that way, you understand...
Everybody's mind goes that way, General. Everybody's mind. Everyone's. Believe me. How do I know? I'm on Facebook.
Hey. Way to really pull that one out of the fire.
Thank you. All right. Leopard injures seven people.
You're still on that one, huh?
Yeah, I'm still on it. Meerut locks itself in. By the way, Meerut is a town in India. I thought it was a country. I thought it was a province. I don't know what the hell it was. Or Meerut is a city or town in India, in the Indus Valley, an ancient city, a very, very old city. And this is where this leopard got loose. Seven people were injured at the Cantonment Hospital. So there's been a curfew in this town, and the entire town is locked down because of this leopard. Police warned people to stay indoors, cover the windows, and do not peep out from your balconies, they announced on loudspeakers. Why is that?
Yeah, the leopard will see you peeking out.
Yeah, probably if it sees you, it's going to know your home.
If it sees you, it's going to know your home. I don't understand that.
Didn't the police say don't peek out? They must know what they're talking about.
Why would you? I don't understand, because there's a leopard out there. If you peek out a window, the leopard is going to...
The leopard?
Leopard.
I don't... The leopard may be a real animal. I'm not criticizing.
No, there's no leopard. If the leopard sees...
The leopard sees you, would be a natural thing. It would want to go up and you know, confront you looking at it.
What, are you nuts or something?
Phil, we know the police said what they said. What's your excuse?
Woo! Burned.
Everybody's ganging up on me tonight, man.
Oh, poor baby.
No, I'm sorry. You can have it, man.
Well, all right, so the cops are saying, don't look out, don't peep out on your balconies, they've said. The town's been divided into nine sectors, each under the charge of a magistrate. Joint teams of the Army, Forest Department, and local administration have been formed to trace the animal. Good God! We've formed over six special teams, but have not been able to locate the leopard so far. It was last seen outside a building on Abu Lane in the early hours of Monday. We searched the entire building, but could not find it. The animal's probably scared to death, hiding someplace. Nobody knows where the leopard came from. It was first sighted at around 11 a.m. on Sunday in a, I don't know what this is, a godown near Sadar Thana. That's some kind of a habitat. And the animal remained inside the godown until late afternoon, even as a crowd gathered outside. According to experts, the leopard, a male, is estimated to be around 5 years old. 3:30 in the afternoon, a civilian entered the godown to prove that the leopard wasn't there. He removed a plank of wood, and the leopard leapt out, took a swipe at the man, and ran off. To prove it wasn't there, huh?
Yeah, I guess it's proof. It ain't there now.
No, it's not there now. What about that, man? And this is a wild animal that is see, this is a habitat. These are humans encroaching into a habitat that is still pretty much controlled, or at least is still shared by a rather active wild animal population. All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show back with more news here this evening. Carl Icahn ranted about Silicon Valley. It was an eBay rant spotlighting clubby Silicon Valley. Well, anyway, we'll see what he's got to say about eBay and other technological news. There's a piece of news from Mark Zuckerberg who says that the money they paid for WhatsApp, $19 billion, is a bargain. And I've never even heard of this app. I don't know anybody that has. I mean, not any real people. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, and tune in. We are live and mobile on our website right now at philhendryshow.com, live and mobile on our website, live and mobile on TuneIn. So we're all kinds of places doing all kinds of things here. So who do we have now? Is this guy Jim Doville?
Yeah, this is the guy Karen Doville's brother, or brother-in-law.
Karen Doville, who is a listener of ours, has a brother-in-law that's frequently calling as well along with her. Now, he is on line three, is it? And I think Karen's... Karen, how are you doing?
Oh, Phil, we heard what you were doing. We are loving your program tonight and every night. We just wanted you to know that. We just love it. That's all I'm going
to say.
Okay.
How you doing?
Jim, how are you?
I'm very good. Listen, I did animal control for 7 years. Two counties out from Baltimore, as well as where we are from originally in Somerset in Georgia. I'm familiar with how to handle these wild animals. Now, we've dealt with usual house pests, raccoons, and these kinds of animals that can get in through a hole in the roof. Now, you mentioned you and I talked about this a while, but I don't know if you remember. You and I talked about when you'd had, or you thought you had raccoons in the attic.
Yeah, the old house I was living in.
I understand, but the statement you've made is you thought you had raccoons in an attic.
That's what I thought, yeah.
I understand, and I told you at that time that I would be happy to come out and look at it. I didn't live in California, but if I'd lived in the area, I'd come out and look at it. Do you recall that?
Yeah, I remember you and I were discussing it, yeah.
But I told you at that time that I would go in and take a look. But there's a 50-50 chance when you go into any enclosed space, even with an animal like a raccoon, which is a wild animal, but I don't think we think it certainly is a man-eater. It's not anything that's going to, it does not attack human beings as a food source. It attacks the human generally as a natural enemy. And I said I would go in there. But there's no guarantee I come out of an encounter with a raccoon uninjured.
I understand. I know that they're very, very vicious animals.
Yes. But if you have a raccoon, now, this animal is a leopard. This is a man-eater. This is an animal that will kill you. And I don't know if you remember the film Clockers, where Scientific had a sweatshirt on, and he had the barrel of a gun on the sweatshirt. It was a piece of artwork. Do you recall that?
Yeah.
Okay, and it said, I'm going to kill you. I always imagine a leopard or a raccoon, any animal that is in an enclosed area wearing that shirt. It sounds silly. Well, hold on.
No, this is Karen. He's just getting off on a tangent. Tell Phil what you know, though.
I'm going to do it, Karen. I'm going to do it.
Tell Phil what you know about getting the raccoon, not the raccoon, the leopard. Because Phil is on the air.
I understand, Karen. Not the first time I've talked to Phil Hendry. I've talked to Phil Hendry many times.
All right, okay,
so that's okay. I'm enjoying the conversation, Jim. So you worked animal control for one or two counties in your life, and you've dealt with what kinds of animals?
Oh, we've dealt with raccoon. We've dealt with snake, rattlesnake. I think you had mentioned you've had a variety of problems that are similar to the ones that we deal with, Phil. Didn't you say at one time you also had a rattlesnake problem?
We did. We had a rattlesnake in the garage.
Okay, and did animal control come out for that?
They did, yeah. I didn't feel like messing around with it. Some friends of mine said, just get a shovel and kill it. I didn't want to, you know, I was going to let... Because it was coiled up pretty tight. It was a baby rattlesnake.
Well, those are dangerous. Baby rattlesnakes are dangerous. They don't know, because they're infants, and have not been taught, you know, the instinct for any animal is the younger they are, the more immature, and a baby rattlesnake doesn't have any idea, it has no idea what it's doing, so it will bite you and go ahead and release all the venom that it has and wipe you out. You are a dead man walking, and the baby rattlesnake is there looking at you like, you know, there's something wrong with you because why are you dying? See, it doesn't understand.
Well, I doubt seriously whether the baby rattlesnake cares either.
Well, that's a point too. Yeah, no, it obviously doesn't care. But if it was an adult rattlesnake, it would have the common decency. Well, that's probably the wrong way to put it, right, Karen?
You don't say it. Rattlesnake's not going to have the common decency. I didn't mean to butt in.
But don't butt in,
dear. No, but your film is still. I'm sorry.
No. It's fine. Let me ask you about leopards here, Jim, because that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, no. The leopard now is a whole different situation. The leopard, that's a step up. That's a step up from anything that I've ever dealt with. And if certainly anyone from animal control is called to a residence, and we're told that there is a leopard in the attic or a leopard in an enclosed room, you have to take into consideration a couple things. Number one, you may be the object of it wanting to get something to eat. And you may be, you know, the thing that it wants to eat. That will, if I determine that, I will not even go to that residence. I will stay clear of the residence because I can't deal with that personally.
Well, I mean, who would, you know?
Well, there's some people that can deal with a wild animal, can tranquilize it, can stun it, and can subdue it and put that animal into some kind of a contained area where it is then transported to the wild and re-released, or... the animal is put down or it is kept in captivity. Some people can do that, even though they know the animal wants to eat them. But if I know an animal wants to eat me, I won't answer that. I won't take that call. I'll say, I'm going to give that over to Section 3 or probably move it on over to Section 4 or the blue section. I will not go out to any animal that I may not come back, not only not come back from, but there won't be anything of me to bury. You see what I mean?
Well, okay. We're talking here with Jim Deauville, who is the brother-in-law of Karen Deauville.
Yes, what exactly are your credentials, Jim, other than the fact that you just called the show?
Well, he's got credentials.
No, but I'm hearing you talking about being eaten.
Well, I said to Phil, Margaret, that get a load of you. I mean, who are you to ask me?
She has a right to ask the question. You worked for animal control.
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Yeah, I worked for animal control.
Well, what is this about not wanting to be eaten? That sounds very ridiculous. Do you get many calls like that?
No, I do not get many calls like that. That's what I'm saying. Now I don't get any calls like that. None at all.
Why is that?
Why is what?
Why don't you get calls like that anymore?
Because I don't work for animal control anymore. I've got a cabinet making business.
Well, what the? No, I understand. I understand.
God, I thought I made that clear. I don't work for animal control. I wouldn't take that job again if they promised to plate me in gold. If the guy that ran the place was gold plated, you see.
What difference did that make?
What difference does what make?
No, don't we get sidetracked with a question like that.
I just wonder if the guy's gold-plated.
If the guy's gold-plated, you're going to want to work for that guy, wouldn't you?
Why?
Oh, so now you want to know why, too.
Yeah, get a load of Phil. You wanted to move past that.
Well, now I'm interested. Why would you want to work for a guy that's gold-plated?
Because you could... If he's gold-plated, maybe he's got some to spare. I don't know.
He's got gold-plating to spare?
Okay, I heard the laugh. I heard you go, he's got... I heard the voice crack up. I heard you crack up. I heard you crack yourself up. So I'm gonna let you go, Phil.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to run you off.
No, it's okay. I can tell now when I'm the butt of a joke, and I don't say I'm the butt of the joke. I say that I am the a-hole of a joke. That's how it is for me in my world. I'm turned into the a.
All right. Thanks very much, Karen. Just
let me get. Hold on. Yeah, Karen. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Henry went on hold. Yeah, okay.
Fine, bud. Thank you very much.
Why don't you just get her back on the line?
Because then I'd have to say, hey, would you please give the phone over to your sister-in-law? And then he'd ask why. And then I'd say, because you're getting weird now, man. You're talking about being the a-hole of a joke.
That guy is not just the a-hole of a joke, but he is the a-hole
of any topic.
Yes, of any topic. Any topic. So he's not just the butt. In other words, he's not just the butt of a joke. He's the butt of history and the butt of geography.
What?
Now, that doesn't make any sense. Being the butt of a joke means you're the object of a joke. How can you be the object of geography?
Phil, I don't know. Why do you got to play it? I don't understand what I'm saying. I'm just giving you I'm giving you something to hang your hat on.
All right, so the leopard in... that's wild, man. So we've had one guy who was a primate expert, and we just had Karen's brother-in-law who used to get raccoons out of an attic. But he's never, ever gone on a leopard call, nor would he go on any call requiring him to deal with an animal that could eat at him. Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com in our online store right now, as I speak... In our online store is the Rudy Canoza Je T'aime Lingerie T-shirt.
Yay!
Right. And this is a beautiful ladies' pink tee. Now, as was pointed out to me over the weekend, no, it's not just for women. Anybody can buy the pink Rudy Canoza three-color, I say pink, but it's also in two other kind of shades of red. Anyone can buy that T-shirt and can wear that T-shirt. If you're a dude, sure, go ahead, have at it. Be my guest. It's, you know, it's your life.
No kidding.
It's fine. And actually, we had one guy actually sent a picture of himself in the Rudy Canoza T-shirt, and he was also wearing a diaper. So
I'm telling you, you've got some listeners that need serious medical attention. They need psychiatric evaluation. That was in the T-shirt, and he was wearing a diaper. Well, what did he have a pacifier in his mouth? You know, before I was married, I've got
what.
I've got stories I could tell you.
Well, I don't know if I want to hear. Does it involve Frank?
Not necessarily Frank, but some guys are all, mommy.
God.
You kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Anyway, so check it out at philhenryshow.com, our online store, the Rudy Canoza Je T'aime Lingerie T-shirt. While you're in there, look at some of the other things we have to offer in terms of our collectibles and clothing. Phil Hendry online store, philhendryshow.com. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Didn't this song they killed a girl?
No, they did not kill a girl in this song, okay?
No, this was the one they thought there was a snuff.
There was no snuff in this song. That's like somebody on a roller coaster.
What is?
So the girl in the middle of this song, you guys don't know, those of you that are probably too young, an asinine rumor floated as soon as that song came out, Love Roller Coaster by Ohio Players, that somebody was snuffed in the next studio because you can hear a woman screaming through the instrumental break. That has to be someone being murdered. Why? Of course. The band just missed it, and the producer and the engineer and everybody just missed this scream. No, nobody got snuffed.
Well, then why did they say that?
Because everybody was on drugs back then. That's why.
Boy, no kidding, Mr. Henry.
That's why. Everybody was on drugs, and so everybody was saying everything, and everybody was believing it. I'm telling you right now, I lived through the 70s, and the 70s was the worst decade in the history, possibly in the history, outside of the Civil War, in terms of the behavior of the American people, the worst decade. It was disgusting on every level, on every level. The parents, the behavior of adults, the music wasn't all that good. The music sucked.
You're telling me you don't like Love Roller Coaster?
Love Roller, I like that song. There were some good bands, but the... You know, and even the early... Now, I would say that punk was good because it saved rock and roll from itself. Rock and roll was in danger of becoming what it eventually did become, so self-important and so in love with itself that there was no retrieval. It was on its way to an early demise. But, you know, it was at least retrieved from that briefly by punk rock, which came along and turned the whole thing upside down. You know, when you got a band like the Sex Pistols vomiting in a record executive's office. You got to love that.
What do you mean you got to love that? That is, you talk about an abomination.
Well, but no, but I, you know, but I'm just saying that they, I think that that was a necessary act, you know.
Well, what was it? Some kind of a revolutionary act? Is that what you're saying, Henry? You had more of these people back then.
No, it wasn't a revolutionary act. No, it was just, it was refreshing. It was a disgusting decade. Disgusting. Than for the fact that the consumption of recreational drugs was out of control, and you know, and there wasn't anybody. You couldn't even make an argument in those days, and have anybody stick around and listen to it, that drug use was bad. You know, everyone would have considered you raining on their parade, trying to stop the party from happening. Yada 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 yada. So this book you have to read about the 70s. As soon as I find out the title of it, I'll bring it in.
Now, this is the one you've been threatening to bring in about how the 70s was a decompression of some kind?
Yeah, he said the 70s was a party.
The 70s, according to this author, America had been on high alert and red alert and emergency standby for decades. I mean, we had been since the turn of the century, maybe not since the turn, but since World War I, we were on a total... alert status. We were like a garrisoned society. I mean, we had the guns ready, and we were ready to rock and roll and kick ass, and we go through a depression, and then we had a war. And we had, you know, and it was just not fun. And then the war ended, and then comes the 50s, and everybody has a flat top, and everyone's doing it the way they ought to do it. Have kids, have a nice house, have the barbecue, everything coming, you know, everything's buttoned down. Keep those commies out of here. Keep it buttoned down. Keep it good. Keep it America. Keep it baseball. Keep it football. Keep it, variety shows with Jerry Lewis, all that. And gradually what happened was we sort of looked around us and we looked at ourselves. We said, you know what? There's nobody really to be afraid of anymore. Yeah, there were commies, but no one was buying it. Nobody was really buying the commie threat anymore. And yes, there were a lot of people that were taking it seriously. And I imagine they had their reasons. One of the things that the Reagan years proved was that I better not keep...
You're starting to get on the wrong side of me if you are going to criticize Ronald Reagan.
I'm not criticizing President Reagan, not at all. I'm just going to say he spent enough money. His thinking was, I spent enough money, I can break these people because they got no money. The Russians are... It's the very thing that Hitler said about Bolshevism, only... It was filtered through a reasonably sane mind. When he said, kick in the front door, the whole rotten structure will fall, Hitler thought he could do that with tanks. He didn't get it. Reagan got it. You kick in the front door, the whole rotten structure falls down with money. With money. And that's exactly what happened. So the threat of commies was never really taken, and shouldn't have been, because that's all it took. A couple of bucks, you make them spend enough money, and the whole thing falls to pieces. The 70s was like this big party that the country threw for itself, finally, when we realized there wasn't anything to be afraid of. Now, I'm not saying that that's the way it ought to be.
Well, you talk about a party, everybody on cocaine, everything like that.
Well, I mean, it was just a big, everybody letting their hair down. I mean, the 70s was just nutty. It was all about do whatever you want, smoke whatever you want, do whoever you want, listen to whatever you want, be what you want. It was dumb. And look at the clothes. Oh, God. Is there anything worse than what I wore in the 70s?
One of these days, I'd love to get a picture of you wearing some clown outfit from the 70s.
I don't think one exists.
But you do burn them all?
I bet you burned every picture you got of yourself, man.
No, there's some 70s pictures of me that survive. I don't know how many there are. But,
Did you wear the clown suit? I've seen more guys from back then in the clown outfit.
What do you mean the clown outfit? What does that mean?
You know, the big flare pants.
Yeah, everybody had on an orange clown orange clown pants.
Yeah.
Orange clown pants. You mean the flare pants?
What do they call those?
Call them bell bottoms.
Yeah, bell bottoms. I didn't know what they were called. That day it's called clown slacks.
No, clown slacks?
Yeah, we call clown slack.
What is the clown slack? I remember. Now, I don't know what you people are talking about. I had an ice cream colored. I know a lot of people made fun of them, but I found it to be comfortable, and Patsy bought me three of them. I had an ice cream colored leisure suit.
Oh, man.
Oh, well, what are you all of a sudden? What are you, Mr. Blackwell?
Mr. Blackwell.
An ice cream colored what?
It was a two-tone leisure suit. You got a problem with that?
Oh, my God, General.
Well, what is that about? You know, I would wear... What are you talking about?
Leisure suits were sort of just no good, man.
Oh, is that right? Well, thank you for letting me in on everything, Tab Hunter.
Look, I'm not trying to criticize. God knows I'm not the best dresser in the world, but leisure suits, you know.
Well, leisure suits were really for the middle-aged guys back then.
I thought they were very comfortable, and I had a two-toned, I had a lime... A lime-colored leisure suit.
A lime-colored leisure suit. Holy jeez.
Well, Phil, you're talking about it as if someone purposefully infected me with gonorrhea. What do you mean?
Well, just a lime... Purposefully infected you with gonorrhea?
That's the way it sounds.
No, just a lime-colored leisure suit sounds almost too weird to be true. Okay.
Let me tell you something, my friend. It was true, and it wasn't too weird to be true. It was weird, maybe, but it was true.
So I guess it wasn't weird.
That would be my assumption, yes.
Okay, so coming back here on the Phil Hendry Show, more on the passing of Harold Ramis. Great director, funny, funny man. He died today from complications due to illness, and we're going to talk about that and more. We come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. And, of course, we are live mobile on our website right now, live and mobile on TuneIn right now. Oh, and visit the online store for the Je T'aime T-shirt. It's the Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. Big announcement coming up. Not a big announcement. Well, I said I didn't think it was a big announcement, but Nikki thought it was.
I agree with Nikki. I think it's a very big announcement. And are you going to do it now?
No, we'll do it after our first break.
All right, big announcement coming up, a first break, everybody.
No, I'm home, man. What are you doing?
I'm just making an announcement.
Well, he's saying, I understand, Bud, but Phil's on the air saying the big announcement.
Yeah, let everybody else know in the studio.
Yeah, thank you, Bud, but I think they get it.
I know. I was just talking to him.
All right, but just getting that a big announcement coming up after the first break.
Thank you very much, Bud. Very good. Okay, so there's a big announcement.
No, I already said it.
I'm going to say it again, if you don't mind. A big announcement coming up after the first break.
Kind of redundant.
Yeah, well, you know. So, concerning the Phil Hendry Radio Show, and it's not bad. It's all good. I think it's good. It's good for me, I'll tell you that.
Woo!
Man.
So are you going to tell everybody about your big meeting today?
No, well, I'm not going to. I just would say that we've moved down the road further with our animation project. Very excited. Had a fantastic meeting today with representatives, can we call them an agency?
Yes.
And I won't say who or what or how, but I'll just say that our project is now rep by a fantastic agency, and that we are going to be setting up, as they call them, pitch meetings.
Now, everyone should know, if they saw the film The Player, those were bad pitches that they were doing. Is that right? That's what you were saying?
Yeah, I would say so. At the beginning of that movie?
Yes, they're all coming out. Oh, I have an idea for a movie?
Yeah. Those were people that, I think they were representing and Robert Altman was satirizing how bad pitches are done, you know, and... kind of sloppy, and people don't quite have their stuff together, and it's very weird. So we had an interesting meeting today, and I was actually learned a lot about how to sit down in a room and you know, communicate your ideas in a coherent way, because I can tell you, you know, if there's one problem we have in this world today, it's communication. And you would be surprised to probably hear that of all the places where it's hard to communicate, sometimes the worst for me is in my own business, the communications business. People don't know what the hell you're talking about. So you got to be really clear. And so it was a very interesting meeting. And there's a lot of things that we want to do with our show, and you have to communicate all of them pretty clear. But that's as far as I would like to go with that. Thank you.
So you're not going to give us any of the background, because I'd like to...
Well, Margaret, I mean...
Well, I'd like to meet up with the people that you did to do some further reporting.
No, thank you, but no.
What a pain...
Yeah, that's me, a pain in the ass.
I said ass, but no one could hear it.
Well, I guess I made them hear it then.
Yes.
All right, governor of Arizona is pressed to veto bill. Now, this law that was passed last week, I guess, on Thursday, is a law or a proposed law that was passed by both houses of the Arizona legislature, and it would grant business owners the right to invoke religion to refuse service to gays and others. What does that mean?
Well, like, you know, probably like a guy that dresses like a girl or something.
Yeah, I would think that it's a man that cross-dresses or a man that affects or presents as a non-gender or transgender.
What? What does that mean?
Jesus, Henry, did you listen to me? I said...
I'll do it.
I'll do it. It allows the state of Arizona...
I'll do it. It allows the state of Arizona to refuse business owners in Arizona to refuse business to anybody. I mean, if you want to get right down to it.
No, it don't, man. No. They can't refuse the black people.
How do you know they can't refuse the black people?
Well, what is that supposed to mean, Phil?
Well, I don't know what it means, and others. I guess it means the sex thing then, right?
Yeah, it's got to have to do with sex, man. Ain't got nothing to do with black people.
All right, fine. I mean, of course, I don't want to be boring and bring up the obvious.
What's that?
Well, I mean, if you can refuse service to gay people, why can't you refuse service to black people?
Because it ain't the same thing, man. And far as they're concerned, I mean, I'm not saying I think it is. You know, I mean, well, not really.
Yeah, you're saying, what, are you gay or something?
Shut up, man.
Hey, wait. I don't want to get into this. You guys are just dumb enough to mess this whole discussion up, okay? Nobody's saying you're gay. They're saying that there is a protected status being a gay person in America in many states. Now, I know that's still a states' rights thing, which is always kind of weird, you know? Human rights, the rights of citizens, should be guaranteed in the Constitution. We're told that it is, but apparently not totally, because the discussion about gay people has still escaped some. Some people still think it's a choice.
Well, are they sure that it isn't?
The science that we currently have, and the people who have analyzed and have empirically gone through the process of researching and compiling the information. In other words, the science that we have and that we understand tells us that it is orientation from birth. Being gay, we certainly know, is not a psychiatric condition. It was taken off the list of psychiatric conditions sometime in the 70s, early 70s, maybe the 60s, and doctors are agreed that it is an orientation. That is, it is genetic, it is biologic, it is something that you are, quote-unquote, born with. That's what, you know, is the accepted science. Now, what they're doing in Arizona, man, I don't get it.
Well, what did they say?
Well, Jan Brewer, now, the interesting thing about this is that you've got, this is not a partisan thing, because there are Republicans that are opposed to it. Even the guy that helped craft the legislation, or helped pass it, I should say, Bob Worsley, two Republican state senators, three, Adam Driggs, Steve Pearson, Bob Worsley, all guys who are conservatives and guys who helped pass the legislation in the first place, have released the following quote: "While our sincere intent in voting for this bill was to create a shield for all citizens' religious liberties, the bill has instead been mischaracterized by its opponents as a sort of religious intolerance." So they said that Brewer signing it into law would cause the state immeasurable harm. Guys, and I don't mean to lecture you, but if you can't clearly state, if what you are trying to clearly state is simply being mischaracterized, there's something wrong with the way that you communicated it. You can't possibly blame someone misinterpreting what you're saying. If what you're saying is clear, if you're making your statement and it is clear what your statement is, and I got to assume that your law...
Well, that's not it. They're saying that the law is clear, but that the publicity surrounding it has caused misunderstanding.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying.
All right, okay. So invoking... here's the way the... let me see that. So,
no, I'll look at it. Mark.
Give me that. Quit grabbing stuff out of my hands, okay?
Phil, the only way I'm not going to grab anything out of your hands is if, well...
Yeah, this is if it was your penis.
I'm going to... Hey, hey, watch it.
What a thing to say, bud.
Well, I was thinking it, but I didn't say it.
Oh, great. God, Margaret.
I said I wouldn't. If I saw you sitting there holding...
If she saw you sitting there holding it, she wouldn't try to grab it out of your hands because, well...
No, it's not his religious... Is that what you're saying, his religious right?
How did you get that out of that? I mean, what are you talking about?
Is that what you're saying, General?
When you're talking about my religious right to refuse service, if I see Phil sitting there with it, when he's holding onto his thing, I'd refuse him service, yes. Would you?
Yeah, I'd refuse me service, too.
Why?
If a guy is sitting in my restaurant and his pants are unzipped and he's holding his thing in his hands, you bet I'd refuse him service, okay? Indecent exposure, you name it, man. Public perversion, who knows, you know? You're telling me that, and that is not my religious belief. That is my belief as a business owner in the law. The law says that guy can't do that.
Well, that's why they want to pass this law. They want to pass a law saying that if you're gay and you go into a restaurant, they can refuse you service.
That's what this law says? Because they're saying that that's being mischaracterized, that that's not what the law says.
Well, that's what it says here.
Well, this is the New York Times. As the Arizona legislature sent a bill to her desk Monday that would grant business owners the right to invoke religion to refuse service to gays and others. That's what it says.
Well, they must be getting something wrong if these guys are saying that it's been mischaracterized.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. If they're saying it's been mischaracterized... Then that's not what it, if that's what the law is, then nobody's mischaracterizing it. It's a bad law. It's a, in my opinion. But if that ain't it, if it's something else, and these guys are saying that it's been mischaracterized into that, well, then they ought to be heard. You know, then they have a right to have what they're saying heard. I don't know. I'm assuming, and maybe I shouldn't assume.
Then you assume you make an ass out of it.
No, man, you don't make an ass out of it. You make it out of you and me.
You make an ass. What do you mean you make an ass out of it? When you assume, you make an ass out of you and me. That's the thing. All right, we'll be back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Let's see if we can't, I don't know, man, find it or something? Is there a way we can find it online or find it online and take a look at it? And then we have the passing of the great Harold Ramis to talk about, the great director. So many funny movies, man. Groundhog Day, What About Bob? Cast member of Stripes and former SNL cast member. The Phil Henry Show. Be right back. Harbors open their... Back to world famous Phil Henry Show. I mean, I haven't found the law, but everything that I'm reading.
Yeah, on there it says it.
Everything I'm reading basically says the same thing, that it is giving Arizona businesses the right to refuse service to people if they're gay. That's kind of the thrust. That's the universal thrust of every single solitary thing that I'm reading. I don't need to get any further than that to understand the basic premise, which is that if I own a business, I can't. Oh, are you gay? Like, for instance, you know, if it's like this, if I don't like to see two guys kissing.
Well, that would be different because if you extended the same prohibition.
Yeah.
Hold on, bud. I'm not done. Prohibition. Do you know what that means?
Yes.
No, I'm not. I'm asking bud.
Yeah, when they don't allow alcohol.
No, it's more than alcohol.
It's not allowing anything. So if they extended the prohibition to straight people that kiss, well, then I understand that. You don't want to see people kissing, period. But if you say two men can't kiss, but you can see a man and a woman kiss, then you're discriminating against them based upon their sexual orientation. You see?
Yeah, no, I understand. I agree. And that's discrimination. But so all I'm trying to say is, if you just stop there, and everywhere that I look, unless the bill doesn't say that, unless the bill has nothing whatsoever to do with that, and these guys are saying something that should be heard, like this guy Morsley saying, wait a second, man. We're not saying that a business has the right to keep gay people, to not serve gay people. We're not saying that at all. If that's what that cat's saying, then he needs to be heard and allowed to explain, because that's what everybody's saying it is.
Well, they're saying that you can refuse service to the gay. Is that right?
Yes.
All right. And what? Well, if you've got two guys kissing...
Yeah, what about two dudes kissing?
What do you mean two dudes kissing?
I don't mind if a guy's gay coming into my store, but if they're gonna kiss.
If you're gonna say to two guys you don't get the kiss in here, you gotta say that to the. Look, let me explain something, guys. If you have a license to serve to do business with the public, this is part of the public accommodations a section of the Civil Rights Bill. Public accommodations, meaning I'm in business with the public. A lot of people don't understand this. It used to be that even if you hung a shingle out that said, "Hi, I'm in business," you could still tell somebody, "No, I don't want to serve you." Why? Because I don't like your nose. I don't like your clothes. I don't like you. Just, I'm in a bad mood. Get out of here. I don't want to serve you. I don't want, you know, I don't like gays. I don't like blacks. I don't like Jews. Just get out of here. The public accommodation portion of the Civil Rights Act, you can't do that anymore. If you're in business to serve the public now, if you're a private enterprise, a private club, et cetera, you can do whatever the hell you want. But if you're in, you know, in business with the public. So that's what everybody's got a problem with. And people confuse it. They think, well, it's my business. I can serve who the hell I want. No, you can't. Not if you hang out. Not if you are licensed by the public to do business with the public. And you got a license to do business. You've drawn that license from, and you've asked society at large, the government representing the people, I need a license. Okay, we'll grant you the license. And this is my license to do business. Yes, this is your license to do business. Provided that you X, Y, and Z. Well, I don't want to have to do that. All right, well, you can be a private club. Well, what do I? You've got to observe certain health regulations. Beyond that, we don't give a damn what you do. There's a fire code. But if you want to keep Jews out, blacks out, do whatever the hell you want to do, because you're a private club or you are a private establishment and you're not doing business with the public.
Well, that was the whole thing with the Boy Scouts, right?
What about a Boy Scout?
The Boy Scouts was the same kind of argument. You know, well, wait a minute. You guys benefit from public fundraising. You are constantly you're constantly petitioning the public for funds. You interact and are a part of the public business fabric, even though you're not really a business, you're a nonprofit, but you represent yourselves for all intents and purposes as a public enterprise, as a public, as a public entity that is
public.
That's public.
Oh, I see. So you're a public entity, and oh yeah, by the way, you're public. Boy, you guys are.
No, it's. But anyway, so what?
Well, I got my aunt on the phone. She's going to answer some of the questions.
Your aunt? Really?
Oh, yeah. Is that Mavis? I want to talk to her. She is a doll. She's a doll and a half. I want to talk to her.
Yeah, Mark, I want to talk to you.
All right, let me get Mavis on here. Mavis Leonard is Robert's, his aunt, aunt. We, Mavis, I grew up calling the sister of my mother my aunt.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't matter to me. So I told Robert it doesn't make a... Never mind.
Well, we can call you Aunt Mavis.
You call me Aunt Mavis. Robert called me Aunt because that's a South. That's what we do down South and everything.
Now, Robert said you wanted to weigh in on the religious freedom thing.
Yeah, I love John McCain, you know. And I root for John McCain. Everything that John McCain does, I do. And John McCain is opposed to this law. I want people to know that.
Well, no, he ain't.
Yeah, he is, you dumbass. I told him...
Hold on for a minute.
I told this dumbass, you know, I told you last night, Robert, you get that wrong.
Dumb John McCain, a Republican. He's a Bobby and Faye, don't like no gays.
No, that's not true, you dumb... God, man, I'd love to just...
All right, well, what's the argument?
This dumbass keeps saying that John McCain is opposed to... is opposed to gays. That's not true, John McCain. He opposed to this law, you know?
Well, how come John McCain, a Republican...
You know, I'd love to beat you up with. I'd love to take a lead, something made out of lead, and just cave it in. Cave everything in.
You talking about my head?
I'm talking about your head, yeah. And I wouldn't take but one swipe of a lead.
Sorry, that's kind of, I want to ask Mavis. Mavis, this is Margaret.
Yeah. But you heard what I said, Robert.
Why are you going to be discriminating against your own nephew?
I'm not discriminating against you based on your race. I'm not discriminating against you based on your creed. I'm discriminating against you based on the dumb acidness of the way, man.
The dumb acidness.
I'm telling you the truth right now.
Mavis, so you are opposed to the Arizona law because John McCain is.
Absolutely. And I tell you why. Because that proved that even a conservative are opposed to this dumbass law. And I've got a nephew here, Dermot. My nephew, Robert, had come home last night. He said, well, honey, I guess you're going to be getting up in the gay state. I said, why would I be opposed to gay people? He said, on account of John McCain. I said, well, I got one on you, you dumb. Oh, man.
What? You, okay.
Are you sure?
Yeah. You want to know how I'm sure?
How?
Because I know how to read. I know how to read.
I read. I read good.
You don't read that good. You don't. Oh, man, this is what he did. He spent all day. You know he's this dumbass. Let me tell you something, Phil. Can I tell you something?
Go ahead.
This dumbass has every puppy bowl. He's got every puppy bowl on a DVD. I got nothing against that man. Want to sit on his can, watch a puppy bowl. That's good for him, you know. But if you at the puppy bowl and you can't figure out what the hell John McCain saying one day next, your mind is on vacation and your mouth's working overtime. You know, just like Moses Allison said.
All right, so, but have you analyzed this yourself? And
I knew I'm not going to be in favor of this law, but John McCain, he said it's a bad law, too, and that pushed it over the top for me.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Are you just doing this because of John McCain?
No, I'm not, Margaret. I just got done telling you. I said I knew I was against it, but John McCain against it, too.
I don't know. You have to double-check that.
No, she's right, Robert. John McCain's against it, too.
Oh, man, Robert, I swear. Well, just go back to the puppy bowl, all right? Just go back. I figure by the time Robert finished looking at the puppy bowl, maybe the world moved past all his dumbass. Just a dumbass.
Okay, you might want to...
Hey, Mavis? Yeah, she's still there. She said she's going to hang up.
Okay, whatever that means.
Well, I don't know.
Hey, Robert, you know, your aunt's right. Your aunt, you know.
I call her my aunt.
Okay, she's right. John McCain is opposed to the bill. In fact, the other Republican senator from Arizona is opposed to the bill as well. John McCain and Jeff Flake had nearly identical posts on Twitter with both of them saying they hope Brewer would veto the bill. And by the way, Apple is set to locate... they are set to locate part of their business in Arizona, and it ain't exactly looking too boogie-woogie for that man if this goes forward. There's a lot of businesses that don't like it, a lot of businesses that feel it's going to be bad for their business. American Airlines, Apple, when you talk about that kind of a thing. Well, anyway, we'll be back with more Phil Hendry Show. I blew it, man. I hit the wrong button, you know?
That's the story of your life.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Hit the wrong button, man, the story of my life. Welcome back, and now for the... I said I was going to make a special announcement. I forgot to make the special announcement when I said I would, but here it is. I don't think it's that big of a deal, but Margaret and Nikki both said that it merits and warrants a mention. So this is what's going to happen on the 15th of March following our last terrestrial show. We're leaving the terrestrial platform on the 14th. And on the 15th, we will begin our show at a new time, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern.
Man, you're going to be like a daytime show?
I thought they had you on at night because of the vulgarity. Not, I don't think your show's vulgar, but they thought the vulgarity... And the sickness of the things you do.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it is true, Phil.
Well, we're not going to be on at night anymore, whether we're vulgar or sick. We're going to be on in the daytime. So the show will begin. It will be a live webcast at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. And that's live on our website, philhendryshow.com. It is live on TuneIn. And it is fully mobile as well as obviously accessible on your desktop. So if you have your cell phone with you, which you guys have, I know, and you want to hear the show as you're out and about, you can hear it on your cell by way of philhenryshow.com, mobile, or tune in. So that is the 15th. We will start the show at 9 a.m. The other part of that is that the show is going to be available on demand for 5 days on iTunes and as well as some other platforms, I think SoundCloud, Sideshow Network. It'll then go behind the paywall on the 6th day. So instead of making one show free the day of the broadcast or the day of the podcast, we will make 5 shows available to you and then behind the paywall. So this is a way of getting more and more people involved in the Phil Hendry Show and at the same time having, you know, showing some respect for our subscribers.
Well, the subscriber's the one you got to respect. You don't have to care about nobody else.
That's not true. God.
Well, why do you give a damn about the subscribers are the only ones that you should care about? Everyone else can go eat it.
Oh, that is, I mean, I agree, but...
Go eat it, huh?
That's my feeling.
No, that's not my feeling. Nonetheless, the 15th of March is when all of this kicks off. So I'm very excited about it. The reason being, for the very first time in, God, I don't know how long, man, since Miami, I'm doing a show in the afternoon, you know, instead of doing a show at night. Although we did do Afternoon Drive in Los Angeles very briefly, but really that was only for a few months.
Yeah, and then it was a big bomb, and then they moved it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Margaret.
Well, I mean...
Well, I'm not trying to embarrass you, Phil.
It wasn't a big bomb, but, it, you know... Now I don't give a damn, see? So, no, I do. We're going to be on from 9 to noon, or 9 to 11. The other part of the announcement will have to do with... the show being 90 minutes to 2 hours long. At its present configuration, you know, the three-hour radio show was created not because radio shows are good at 3 hours, but because that was the optimum limit you could get out of a man or a woman on the air without killing them, giving, you know, a quality performance. Well, if you're a disc jockey, that's great. If you're a talk show host taking all kinds of phone calls about gays and Obama, that's probably okay, too. But if you're doing, you know, 3 hours of improv like we do, it's too long. So a two-hour limit, maybe 90 minutes, is what we're going to be going for. But we will be making the podcast available to you daily for 5 days, and we will be live at a time when I think a lot more people are going to be able to enjoy the video cast, you know.
Well, that's a good point, because at 9 o'clock in the morning, noon Eastern, you'll be able to get up, look at the video cast, go, that's nice, and then...
Yeah, do something else.
I don't mean do something else.
What a great sales job.
Oh, Phil, you know what I mean.
No, I don't know what you mean. Nice sales job.
Well, she's simply saying that people can turn on the video cast, look at it, and go, yeah, that, wow, you know, and I'd say, wow, that, well, look at that. And then
And then you'd go and look at something else.
Well, I'd look at television. See, I don't know about looking at my, this whole thing with the smartphone and the video, I wouldn't know that with your eyeballs, you know, it just.
It's very weird for a lot of us, Phil, from a different generation.
Well, I'm so very sorry about that, you know.
A lot of people want to know, where is it on the radio?
Yes, I always get email from people, what radio station are you on? And I tell them, well, we're on TuneIn, and they go, what? So...
All right, well, you know, I don't know what to say to you, because the world is changing, and the radio, the talk radio itself is ceasing to exist as we speak. So, in any event... As we like to say, in any event, I just said in any vent.
The air conditioning vent.
Yes, if you have your air conditioning on, in any vent. In any event, on the 15th of March, that's where we'll be. We hope to see you there. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm going to dig it. I'll be able to have a normal life. Thank you, bud.
Yay!
All right.
A normal life.
A normal life, yes. I'll get up and I'll go to bed at the time that other people get up and go to bed. And we will conduct our business as such. It ought to be fantastic. All right, thank you, Mavis Leonard. Now, people often say to me, why don't I have Doug Danger on the show to talk about the gay issues? And every time we have Doug on the show talking about gay issues, he always sends me an email the next day saying, why do you have me on the show talking about gay issues? I'm a gay man and a gay journalist. That should tell you I don't want to talk about gay issues. I don't know what that means, but there's a lot of stuff having to do with gay people and the rights of gay people in the news. And so maybe if you wouldn't mind, Doug, you could explain that, you know, one more time.
What I'm trying to say to you is, Phil, I, as a gay man, as a gay journalist, I know how to report on stories other than gay issues. Because I'm a gay man, gay journalist, doesn't mean you got to have me constantly talking gay. Now, I've tried to come up with a gay shorthand. You know, I've got a deadline to meet. I've tried to come up with a gay shorthand, the Gay Man Gay Journal, to talk to you about the Arizona law, because I think in that way I can make myself better understood. This is not about gay rights. This is about civil rights. This is about human rights. The Arizona law, I'm Doug Dang, I'm Dag Dang.
Hold on for a minute, Doug. When you start doing the shorthand, we lose you.
Yeah, slow it way down, okay?
All right, I'm Doug Dangay. You talk about Arizona law, the gay, the immigrant gay, gay right. But I tell you, civil right and human right. Being gay man, gay journal. Go in, sit down, restaurant, gay man, kiss. No way, get out, go. No way. I'm Doug Dang.
Are you giving interviews like that everywhere?
Everywhere, yeah.
Wait a minute. Was that just... Is the interview over?
Yeah, it's over. I just gave Phil my comment.
What? I didn't hear him say anything. I heard it sounded like a lot of mumbling.
I'll say it again if you want, General, all right?
Well, go ahead.
I'm saying I'm Doug Dang, Doug Gay. I'm talking about Arizona anti-gay law. Go to a restaurant, sit down, have gay feast. I want to have a gay feast. No man serve gay food.
What the hell? You see what I'm saying? I don't understand a word of that. You understand, Doug? No one can understand that.
Oh, get out of here, man. You know exactly what I just got done saying. I said, I go into a restaurant to have myself a meal, and they tell me that they can't serve me because I'm gay. How about if I ask them, do you serve gay food? Or if I had a gay feast. Let's say I had a meeting of the Gay Club of Arizona. They going to serve me then? See what I'm saying?
No, I don't. No.
Wow.
Well, what's the point you're making with gay food?
If they serve gay food, what kind of food is that?
There is no such thing as gay food. That's what I'm saying. There's no such thing as gay food. So how can there be such a thing as a gay people being that much different from other people? I'm gay, but I don't eat no gay food. They don't serve no gay food. I don't require anything other than being a human being sitting down in a booth with a fork and a knife and a napkin, man. That's all I require. How come a man don't want to serve me? What am I doing? By being there?
All right, well, see, you're making way more sense now than you were with the whole gay man, gay food, that food, gay food.
Well, I agree with what Phil said. See, I didn't understand a thing when you said the gay feast.
I'm saying, if I'm doing Doug Dang, it's short, it's ain't Doug Dang, gay food, gay... Doug Dang, gay man, gay journal, gay food. Me gay food, you gay food. Gay feast, gay.
Will you knock it off, man? That's nothing but gibberish.
Oh, it's gibberish, huh? Look, did I want to come on your show? No. Do I have other things to do? Yes. Did I want to do gay shorthand? Yes. Am I doing gay shorthand? Yes. Am I doing gay? Yes. Now, you understand?
No.
Well, I love Doug, but I'm glad...
Wait a minute, what? Jeff, nobody understands anything you're saying with a gay food. Nobody understands it. Here, talk to Phil. Talk to Phil.
Call me about gay.
Doug, it's Phil. What's the problem?
You gotta hang the phone up on me, man. Why do you want me on the show in the first place?
Because I want to talk sensible with you, man. I don't understand what you're talking about with gay food.
Do you understand what I mean there when I didn't do the shorthand?
You sort of made sense when you said that you don't require anything from a restaurant that anybody else doesn't require. In other words, you sit down and eat food like everybody else. There's no such thing as gay food.
I don't eat gay food, yeah. So what am I demanding of that restaurant? What am I demanding of that guy?
Well, here's the thing. The guy is saying, if the law, what I understand, the guy is saying, you being gay is against his religion.
Me being gay is against it, all right, but okay, so just me walking in there gay? Like, what if I'm not evidencing, what if he doesn't know if I'm gay or not? Is it still against his religion?
What? What does that mean?
You heard what I said, man. I'll say it again. If he doesn't know I'm gay, and I'm sitting and I'm eating in his restaurant, am I infringing on his rights?
No, you're not.
Why not? I'm gay.
Well, but he doesn't know you're gay.
It doesn't make any difference. I'm gay. I thought being gay and serving a gay person infringed on this guy's rights.
Look, man, you're making an argument now that the anti-gay people behind this bill are simply going to say is a lot of clever talk, you know?
Oh, I know. That's what they say. It's a lot of clever talk. But the fact is, they don't even know who they're serving, man. They don't know whether they're serving a gay person or not. They don't know if they're serving a transgender or not. They don't know if they're serving a transvestite or not. And some of the people that are behind this bill, I'd like to find out something right now. I want to know how many homosexuals there are in the Arizona legislature that created this bill and pushed this bill through.
Well, what does that mean?
You know exactly what I mean. I'd like to know about this guy Worsley or Wormley or whatever this guy's name is. How do we know these guys aren't in the closet? Because I agree with you when you said, Phil, so very, very often, if you are virulently anti-gay, you must be some kind of a hatbox closet case fag. And I'll tell you something.
Okay, that's, man, I can't, you know.
Well, he did the big lockout with it.
Yeah, he's got big.
I don't like that word, Doug. And even if you did do the big lockout.
Well, why did he lock it out like that?
Because he wanted to slip one in, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, there you go, man. And that's why a lot of people want to serve gays.
Why?
Because they try to slip it in.
They tried. So in other words, if they were bolder and just stuck it, well.
That's right, Margaret. If they were bolder and just stuck it in.
I am I'm a mother and a woman and a wife and a housewife. I'll thank you to watch what you're saying.
I didn't say anything. You said it. You said stuck it in.
I said stuck. Boy, listen to the grammar.
Well, you did.
I said stick it in.
You said Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And we're mobile on our website at philhendryshow.com. So be sure that you check that out. On the 15th of March, this radio show here goes to 9 a.m. start time. 9 a.m. start time on the 15th of March, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern.
I can't make your way.
Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, Uganda, Arizona hasn't gotten there yet, but, you know, Uganda, I said Uganda.
What Uganda?
Uganda.
Uganda?
Yes, Uganda.
Okay, who are you?
Are you joking?
Oh.
No, he's actually serious. You're an idiot, aren't you?
What?
The name of the country's Uganda.
Oh.
You know, bud, you got to get out more or read. I don't know what your story is.
Phil's sitting there going, Uganda? Uganda.
Uganda. It's a country.
Uganda.
They have, the president signed into law a new anti-gay law. You see, it just cracks me up sometimes, people thinking that somehow America is trailing the rest of the world when it comes to, you know, life. I love sometimes hearing people say, God, it's so embarrassing being an American when all the rest of the world is so progressive. Where's that? Huh? What countries are you talking about? I mean, I don't know one country, not one country that deals with what we deal with in this country and has as much, has as open a society and is as progressive a country. I'm telling you, United States has got more problems today and more challenges today that other countries are just now figuring out. Like, for instance, you know, we're a multiracial society, and we've been dealing with and fighting and sometimes not fighting and you know, just having to confront the reality of that since the beginning of the country. And there's countries now that are just now coming to grips with that. You know, what are we going to do with these colored people? Like traditionally monoracial societies like Sweden, you know, the Scandinavian countries, Japan, where that was the prime minister years ago said that America was a inferior country because we were multiracial. That's the kind of brain surgeon they elected over there in Japan. And there's, I'm sure, more than a few Americans that would agree with it with a jackass like that. But the, you know, bottom line is we have a lot on our plate and we have to confront it every day. Some countries are just now getting around to the idea that it's the 20th century. They're just getting around to the idea of, oh, wow, you know, we're not living in caves anymore. And I don't mean anything by that, you know, it happening to be Uganda. But hey, here's a country where the president just signed into law a group of harsh measures against homosexuality. In an interview with CNN, Uganda's president Yoweri Museveni said, quote, "What sort of people are they? I never knew what they were doing. I've just been told recently, and what they do is terrible, disgusting. I'll bet you anything this guy's gay."
Now, why do you say that?
Oh, this, I never knew what they were doing. Is that right? Any guy that says that is the most suspicious thing I've ever heard in my life. Why, I've just only recently been told. Because, man, I got nothing to do with that. Like, if you knew what gay men did sexually, that would mean you have some information you shouldn't have if you're straight, and that would put you on the suspicious person list for the thought police.
The gay police. You think they've had that?
But you trying to be funny or something, General?
No, I'm not. Yes, I am, Bud, but it doesn't matter whether you think I am or not. You understand that?
Yeah.
No. You understand that.
Take it easy, General.
No, I don't want this guy thinking that he's all of a sudden the comedy judge.
Well,
You're not, Bud. Thank you, General, for that comment. The gay police. I like that.
I think it works.
Great.
Well, what are the gay thought police?
What do you mean, the gay thought police?
Well, if you have knowledge of what gay men do woo, okay?
Margaret, why do you say do woo?
I'm emphasizing a thought. So if you're straight, you live in Uganda, you know what gay men do, then you have violated the gay think. You violated with gay think.
Yeah, that's how George Orwell would put it.
But George Orwell put that?
Yeah, George Orwell would probably I violated gay think. I just said fey.
Instead of say, you go fey. You violated gay think.
Is that right?
What do you mean, George Orwell?
In 1984, he had the language of the future. The thought, you know, unhate. Unlove, unhate was love. I mean, they had a whole new language that retrained your thinking. So gay think would probably be, you know...
No, it would probably be not unstraight.
Yeah, it would be unstraight. That's what a gay person would be, unstraight. Because what they want to do is they want to reinforce in Orwell's vision of the police state, they're reinforcing the words that they want you to be thinking. Because we think in terms of language. We think... with language. We don't think that we do, but we do. We think in the language that we speak. So if you're not thinking of the word gay, you're only thinking of the word straight or unstraight. Everything now devolves and evolves off of the word straight, and there is no other word. You're straight or you're unstraight. You hate or you unhate.
What's unhate, love?
Unhate is love, yeah. So... it wouldn't be gay think. It would be unstraight think.
That's what they say in the Orwell land?
Yes, in Orwell land.
Good God. Well, I don't know.
Bud, try reading a book, man, and then you know what we're talking about. Yeah. So in Uganda, homosexuality is illegal in 37 African countries, including Uganda. But the new law signed by President Museveni goes further by toughening existing penalties for anyone caught having gay sex, criminalizing positive talk of homosexuality. Dig that. Now it's against the speech laws. And also, for the very first time, aggravated homosexuality, whatever that is.
That's probably dressing up like a girl.
Yeah, and then for the very first time, it's against the law to be a lesbian. So, you guys got away with it for, you guys, you know.
Yeah, Margaret, you got away with it.
How dare you?
Watch it.
I'll kick your ass.
All right. Phil Hendry Show at philhendryshow.com. We'll be back here on the other side with more excitement, including Mark Zuckerberg and the WhatsApp, a bargain at $19 billion. Dig that. Mobile at philhendryshow.com and on TuneIn. Welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This hour we'll talk about a leopard that has been isolated, and they're attempting to tranquilize this animal in the town of Meerut, India. A town that is apparently thousands of years old in the Indus Valley, and they got a leopard problem there. And this animal is loose, and it's apparently injured several people, and they still haven't been able to do anything with it. The last thing that I heard about this was that it was somehow isolated. It had made its way into a hospital, and they had it in a room, and they were trying to tranquilize it, but they didn't get three darts into it, only two. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like some kind of super leopard.
Yeah, it sounds like it does anything.
Well, are they still messing around with this damn thing? Why don't they just blow it away?
Yeah, they're trying to be humane, and it ain't working, man. Seven people injured by this leopard. See, this is the thing about animals. Anyway, we tried to get on the line here, George Havanaugh, who's with the Primate Center in Mississippi, because Bud thought that would be a great guy to talk to about leopards. Okay, that didn't work out. Then I think we had somebody, I don't know who the hell else we got. What do you got now?
Well, get on Dr. Larry Dr. Larry Grover.
Dr. Larry Grover?
Well, he's not a deputy Larry Grover.
Larry Grover will come on to talk about the leopard in... Why Larry Grover? That guy's with conservatives of Kern County.
That's he said, if he would talk about a leopard.
Wait a minute, bud. This is the problem I got into the first hour, man, when we talked to some guy who was a primate expert, and he didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground about leopards.
Well, Larry Grover said he knows about it.
No, man, I...
Well, you want to talk to him or not?
Yeah, as long as you got him lined up, I might as well, sure. Harold Ramis, the director of very, very funny movies and a cast member, I think, for a time with Saturday Night Live, died Monday, today. He was 69 years of age. He suffered from autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis, one of more than 15 rare autoimmune diseases that can often be difficult to diagnose. He died from complications of the disease. He battled complications from this disease for years, according to his agent, UTA, which represented him. The agency said he died at home in the Chicago suburbs, surrounded by his family and friends. Harold Ramis was a beloved member of the entertainment community because of the fact that he was a talented performer, but he was also a very talented director and was the brains behind, the directorial brains, I think, behind the film Groundhog Day, which to this day, that movie strikes me as such a easy, very simple premise and entirely compelling. And, of course, it's a very, very compelling premise in that what if you had the same day to live over and over again, you'd eventually get it right in ways that you probably, you know, can't imagine.
Well, and the thing about Groundhog Day was that the character of Bill Murray did all the self-indulgent things only to come to the realization that it was better to just be kind to people.
What? That's not what I saw.
Well, what did you see, bud?
Yeah, it was, but it was still fun to rob a bank and stuff.
It was fun to rob a bank for a while, but then he got sick and tired of it.
Yeah, he did all that stuff. He did all the goofy stuff, remember?
What?
He did all that. He robbed that Brinks truck. He went out with the chick that he always wanted to go out with. Went out with her God knows how many times. He dressed up like Clint Eastwood. Remember all the goofy stuff? But the one thing that he couldn't get right was the girl that he was really attracted to.
Yeah, she was the television station employee that went with him.
Yes, the producer.
Yeah, like the on-site producer, the Andy McDowell character.
Who's she?
The one that he had the hots for, man. Did you see the movie?
Yeah, I saw it. Oh, yeah, the curly-haired girl.
Right, the curly-haired girl, whatever. So anyway, Harold Ramis, a writer, director, and actor whose boisterous but sly silliness helped catapult comedies like Groundhog Day, Ghostbusters, Animal House. We forget about Animal House. That film was hysterical. And Caddyshack, to commercial and critical success, died on Monday in a Chicago area home. He was 69. The case, as we mentioned, or the cause, rather, was the autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis or vasculitis, a disease that involves the swelling of blood vessels, according to Chris Day, who is a spokesman for UTA. Mr. Ramis was a master at creating hilarious plots and scenes peopled by indelible characters, among them a groundskeeper obsessed with a gopher in Caddyshack.
That was Groundhog Day.
No, it was Caddyshack.
It was Caddyshack.
Okay, the guy's obsessed with a gopher?
Yeah, what are you saying?
That's got to be Groundhog Day.
Was it called Gopher Day or Groundhog Day?
Well, I mean, what difference does it make?
Well, it would be called Gopher Day if it was the gopher.
But you didn't see these movies, man. You didn't see these movies, otherwise you'd know what you're talking about.
I didn't see Gopher Day, no.
It ain't Gopher Day, man. It's Groundhog Day. You didn't see that, and you didn't see Caddyshack.
No, I didn't.
Which one did you see?
Ghostbusters.
Well, then don't talk, man, because you don't know what you're talking about. Among them, the groundskeeper obsessed with a gopher, fraternity brothers at war with a college dean, which, of course, was Animal House, and a jaded weatherman condemned to living the same day over and over again, Groundhog Day, until, you know, he eventually gets it right, and that was Groundhog Day. More than anyone else, said Paul Weingarten, writing in the Chicago Tribune, Harold Ramis has shaped this generation's ideas of what is funny. He was writing in 1983, and I would say that's absolutely true, because all of those films were baby boomer hits. And to Mr. Ramis, the fact was that comedy is inherently subversive. We represent the underdog, as comedy usually speaks for the lower classes, Mr. Ramis said. We attack the winners. Mr. Ramis collaborated with the people who came to be considered the royalty of comedy in the 1970s and 80s, notably from the first generation cast of Saturday Night Live, including John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, and Gilda Radner. His breakthrough came in 1978 when he joined Douglas Kenny and Chris Miller to write National Lampoon's Animal House, which starred Mr. Belushi and broke the box office record for comedies at that time. With Mr. Aykroyd, he went on to write Ghostbusters in 1984 and Ghostbusters 2 in 1989, playing the super intellectual Dr. Egan Spengler in Tales of a Squad of New York City Contractors Specializing in Ghost Removal.
Well, it's funny the way you... Yes, when you put it that way, it's funny. But I knew a lot of people that were hurt by that movie, Phil. A lot of people.
What are you talking about, Margaret?
Well, I'll tell you what I was speaking to Phil. That's funny. You sound like General Shaw.
I'm here, Margaret. I'm listening to you.
I'm asking you, what are you talking about?
I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I knew a lot of people that had very, very valuable properties on the Upper East Side. And much of that film turned those properties into, it rhymes with the word, sit.
Oh, you're talking about...
Okay, I think we know. Turned those properties into what?
I had a girlfriend who had a very valuable property there. She had a high-rise right on the park, right on Central Park. And after Ramis came in with his crew, and they did their little funny movie, and it comedically defecated all over everyone there. Comedically, figuratively. But figuratively, Harold Ramis defecated over every single person residing in many of those exclusive properties. I just think that what he did was wrong.
Well, that right there is what he said.
He said he did that?
Yes, he said he'd do that.
He said he did that.
He did that.
He did what? He crapped all over the rich?
Well,
because that's what he said in that quote. He said that we're subversive. Comedy's subversive.
Does that mean you come into a very, very, you come into a community of very hardworking people, or people, yes, who work hard? They came into their money by way of a trust. Just push that aside for a moment. If they got their money by way of a trust or an inheritance, okay, fine, but they work hard, and they worked relatively hard. And to have Harold Ramis come in, squat, and defecate on them, and very, very expensive furnishings and...
Well, all right. Can we speak well of those who have passed on, Margaret? Harold Ramis is not with us anymore.
I understand that. I understand that. And I know he's a very talented man. But I had a girlfriend and her husband, both of them, very expensive furnishings, on an Upper East Side beautiful townhome. And when Ghostbusters was done...
I know. He came in, squatted, and defecated all over their fine efforts.
Phil, you know, you can be a smartass only so far, and then you've got to answer for it.
Oh, really?
God, that sounds threatening.
No.
Well, we'll take a break and continue with the story here, an interesting story, one that should be told, the obituary, if you will, the life and times of Harold Ramis, the great movies that he directed, the funny, funny images and characters that he left with us. World famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com and online. Tune in, and we're on our website, mobile, so you can listen to us live right now, mobile, on either the Phil Hendry website or tune in. Welcome back to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. So we're eulogizing here Harold Ramis. And we were talking about how his movies were representative of a generation. You know, there's a lot of baby boomers, and I'm the first person to say that we've gotten far more press than we deserve, and I really believe that. I think that baby boomers have a lot to answer for. Baby boomers are and were great at talking about what a big generation we have been and how influential we have been, but, you know, there's a whole lot that we screwed up. And one of them, in my opinion, one of the areas where we've messed up bad is as parents and as grandparents, disgraceful generation when it comes to that. I'm just being honest.
How can you say that about a generation that created...
What, the Beatles? So?
I'd like to see your generation create the Beatles.
Oh, well, whatever, okay? I mean, that's fine. But nonetheless... Harold Ramis was there through it all, through all of the hubris, through all of the defeats and all of it. He was there commenting on all of it with his movies. And they were great films. So we were talking about, you know, films like Ghostbusters. You were just saying that Harold Ramis drove the property values down for your friends. I had no idea that Ghostbusters had that kind of an impact.
Well, I had a girlfriend and a husband that couldn't get rid of their home for lover money because of the idiots that came out of the woodwork after the Ghostbusters, believe it or not.
So there were people who wouldn't buy because they thought there were ghosts?
They didn't want to have to even deal with it. You have to understand, these are very sophisticated people. Obviously, they have money. These are not people that believe in ghosts, Phil. But you want to be on the safe side, and you don't want to have to walk into a situation you're going to regret. Now,
how sophisticated and smart can anybody be when they have to... Well, just in case there are ghosts, I better not buy that.
So what are you saying?
Yeah, because they believe in ghosts.
I'm not asking you.
I agree with Bud. I'm saying they believe in ghosts to the point where they don't want to buy a house.
Phil, let me ask you a question, may I?
Go ahead.
Would you buy a home where a murder had been committed?
If I wanted the home, yes.
Oh, bull crap.
Wait, I'm telling you, if I wanted the home, yes, I would.
Are you trying to tell me, and I don't believe in ghosts either, but the spook, you're telling me that you don't think a spook?
Well, you got to be careful.
I'm talking about a ghost, all right?
No, General, I don't. I don't believe in that whole jive thing, no.
I think you're lying. I think you're trying to sound like a big shot.
Wait. Are you telling me that you wouldn't?
I would know. I would be very uncomfortable.
Why?
Knowing that something like that had happened in a home that I was living in, I'd be very uncomfortable.
So it happened. So what? What? You mean it would be better if you didn't know it?
If I didn't know it, yes.
So your mind, you would allow that to mess with your mind?
No.
The fact that it did happen, that there was a guy that got killed there...
Yes, and that would be reverberating. I don't believe in ghosts, but you don't believe I'm not saying a ghost, but you don't believe the spook of the guy.
No, what about the spook of the guy that got killed?
The spook of the guy that got killed. You talk about the ghost?
Yeah, but a spook is a more potent one.
Yes.
Oh, you guys have got to be high on some kind of a narcotic that I've not heard of. The spook is a more
I didn't say more important, I said potent.
Oh, my God, Phil, you don't even... Well, you think we said impotent? Robert, that's a slam on you.
Yeah, Mr. Stanley, what are you trying to say?
Wait a minute, will you, for 5 seconds. Are you telling me that... Well, I know what you're telling me, and I don't buy it. You're telling me that you're the spook of the guy that got... Let me ask you this, okay?
No, Phil, you don't understand.
No. Let me ask you this. You know, the house that you live in... And the property you live in, whether it's an apartment, whether it's a house, whatever, you don't know what has happened there. You have no idea from before they built the house. You remember in Poltergeist, they built it on that cemetery?
Well, that was... they never should have done that.
Well, they never should have done that. Is that right? Why? Because the spook of the people that were living...
You know, Phil, I'm glad you're pretending like it doesn't freak you out.
No, I'm telling you that I don't believe in that kind of thing. I'm not saying I don't believe in an afterlife. I'm not saying that I don't believe in spirits. But I will tell you right now that a murder, while a horrible thing, is no different in terms of its after effects or its life than somebody stubbing their toe, making love, the birth of a baby. It's important to the people's lives involved. It's important to the people whose lives are affected beyond that. It's important to the extant time. It's not important to me now. A baby being born in that room. What about that? Would that make it groovier or something?
Well, what do you mean groovier? Are you trying to mess with me?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying. If there had been a murder committed, but then a baby was born.
What about a baby was committed?
No.
A baby was committed?
Well, that's what you said.
No, I said a baby being born.
If there's a baby being committed, I'd love to see that one.
Yeah. That'd be a first.
Yeah, well, guess what? I never said that, so you guys are thinking about something that's really weird. So the point is, a baby being born, wouldn't that wipe out the weirdness of somebody being murdered? Or does the spook of the guy that, Jesus.
You know, Phil, you can laugh all you want, and you can pretend like it doesn't freak you out, but if you were trying to get some sleep in a room where a man had been gruesomely, dispatched with a series of Ginsu knives, okay?
Yeah.
Oh, look at him pretending like it doesn't bother him.
That doesn't bother you.
No, man. What do you guys want from me? You know, here's where it would bother me. If I knew that some of the blood and some of the, if it was still in the carpeting, I'd probably want the carpeting cleaned up. I wouldn't want that there. That's about as weird as I would get about that. But if it was a house I really wanted, yeah. See, what I'm trying to say is, like, we know that a lot of stuff has happened down through the centuries. How do you know that where you live right now, some band of Native Americans didn't do battle and just carved each other up, man? Just chopped off heads, scalped, you know?
Phil, you're talking about the Native American people essentially peace-loving. You're saying what? Are you saying now that they had wars before the white man got here? Wow, what a racist thing to say.
Yeah.
What are you, trying to tell me that the Native people did not have wars among each other?
I'm not saying they didn't have. They had disagreements, yes. But the butchery, that was the white man.
Well, Margaret, I hate to be the bearer of bad tidings, but war between humans, whether they were Europeans on natives or native versus native, it's been going on since the beginning of time. And the Native Americans that went to war against each other were absolutely barbaric, just as barbaric as any European. Scalpings, enslavement, murder, you name it, man. Torture? Are you kidding me?
Where did you hear all of this?
Where did I hear all of this? This is an absolute history. It is a real history of North America and the peoples that have lived here for the last 13,000 years.
Well, Phil, I would love to see your source material.
I would, too, because I heard you interview that wonderful Native American man with the Indian Association. His name was what, Running Bear or something?
Yeah.
What was his name, Phil? Running the Indian.
Russell Means?
That's it, Russell Means.
Running Bear.
Well, and he said that Indians didn't.
I don't remember Mr. Means saying that. I remember him saying that Native people had been here like 100,000 years, which I didn't dare disagree with him on because he's a very formidable guy and was probably just going to get really mad at me. And what would that do?
Oh, so you chickened out, huh?
Well, I there was no point in arguing with the guy. I wasn't going to argue with the cat. Okay.
Oh, the cat.
Look, Margaret, Miss I Love Native Americans, I'm sure Running Bear, we can get back on the show, and he can talk to you about it.
I got his name wrong. Big whoop.
So we'll be back here on Would You Buy a House Where Indians Had Been Scalping Each Other 2,000 Years Ago? World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
In the same house?
The house presumably had not yet been built, you know?
What?
We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
We won't be right back.
Yes, we will.
No, we won't.
Yes, we will. World famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. This is a band called Lacuna Coil. I like these guys, but in the middle of this song, they're speaking some kind of...
I think it's Portuguese.
Portuguese, I don't know. But Nikki was just saying that her boyfriend Curtis went and saw them, and he's had his birthday this week, and so he's just having, he's li- and he's got Nikki to wake up to every day, so he's living large.
Yeah, some guys get all the luck.
Say that again?
They're from Milan. They're Italian.
There you go. Well, the first metal band from Italy that actually sounds good.
Hey.
Woo! They're from Milan, huh?
Yeah.
I think that is a groundbreaking moment. The reason why I say that is, for the most part, the great bands, whether they're metal or not, have been American, Australian, British, possibly German. Years ago, Scandinavia with golden earring bands like that. But I had never heard of a band out of Italy or Spain or France, especially.
Yeah, France, man. France don't do nothing.
I was in Paris, I don't know how long ago, back when I could afford it. And anyway.
Yeah, back when you had money.
Right, back when I had money. And I saw some French hip hop on TV. And.
Did it suck?
Pretty much. Yeah. Really angry street French kids. Just goes, you know, just pissed off and all French talk. Okay.
French talk. That's a hot one.
All right. So there you go. That's Lacuna Coil from Italia. All right.
Male-fronted band to co-headline Ozfest.
Are they fronted by a girl?
Yep.
Because the lead singer in that song is definitely, unless that's a chick singing, I'm kidding. Well, that's very interesting. I wonder what their influences. Does it say who their influences are?
No, I'll have to read some more about it.
What, does it make you feel inferior?
Well, I think it's a little frightening.
Why?
Well, where is... General, you said it best.
Yeah, I was going to say, where does Italy get off? Where do they get off all of a sudden having these good bands?
I don't know. I mean...
You know, Italy was always they were always a laugh a minute. Now all of a sudden they're getting serious on us.
Italy was a laugh a minute. I have a friend of mine who's from Italy, Alice Carbone, a writer.
Oh, I've seen her on Twitter.
Yeah, Alice is great, and she interviewed me for her blog, and she has just signed a book deal, so she's kicking ass, man. And she wrote for years for an Italian magazine. It was like an Italian magazine, only it was, you know what I'm saying?
Like Vogue?
Yeah, it was like a magazine like Vogue, where they have the European brands of it. And she was a correspondent here in the States and wrote for them. And she has since settled here in the United States because it's kind of her adopted country, America. She has a great affection for America and lives here now and lives in Los Angeles and writes and just got a book deal. And as I said... But she's an Italian, and I think she's from Milan. So maybe she's seen this band.
Maybe she was in a band.
Maybe that's her singing. Alice, is that you? All right. So anyway, rest in peace, Harold Ramis. Very interesting. I could read about him forever, and we still probably would not know the great influence that he had. Rest in peace, sir, and thank you very much for what you gave us.
Does that scare you? He was how old?
69.
Well, you're
getting up there, Mr. Henry. You won't be long now.
Won't be long now what? Until I'm dead?
Well...
You know, Bud, it might not be very long for you either. You don't know. You ride a motorcycle around, and you got a big fat hole in your head.
Well, I'm not going to die.
The way you ride that bike? General Shaw's right. You got a hole in your head from the way you ride your motorcycle, man. You're lucky you survived that. You ain't going to die.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, man. You're lucky you're walking around. You're sitting here telling us about stuff, man. You got a freaking hole in your head. All right, let's check out this one here, man. This is a story. Carl Icahn is targeting both eBay and the clubby nature of Silicon Valley. The activist investor's latest rant takes aim at board conflicts at the online auctioneer of eBay as he agitates for a spinoff of its PayPal business. But Mr. Icahn is taking on a culture bigger than just eBay. He notes that eBay director Mark Anderson's venture capital firm has invested in five competitors of the company, more unsettling at least on their face are profitable investments Anderson Horowitz made in two businesses that eBay sold. It was, for example, among buyers that paid $2.75 billion for Skype in 2009, selling it to Microscope for $8.5 billion less than 2 years later. Wow.
Well, there's the profit.
How do you like that, man? They bought Skype for almost $3 billion and sold it for $8.5 billion 2 years later. You talk about flip. You want to flip something? How about that? Yet overlaps of this kind are endemic in the Silicon Valley, and Mr. Anderson's appeal is a bit like Goldman Sachs clout on Wall Street. The whole point of having him on side is the knowledge he derives from the multiple hats that he wears. Well, basically what this guy Icahn was saying is that, you know, there's a lot of hands, one hand washing the other, man, there's a whole lot of hands washing other hands there in the Silicon Valley. This may be genuinely useful for a company like Facebook, where he's also a director. And since Mark Zuckerberg has voting control, board conflicts are more or less beside the point. On the other hand, Mr. Anderson's skills and Rolodex don't seem to have helped much of Hewlett-Packard's boardroom. I don't know. What is all this about?
Well, what he's saying is there are a lot of people in Silicon Valley that have a hand in a lot of different companies. And so here we have continuing reverberation of...
Margaret, you don't know what you're talking about.
I know more than you clowns do. The monopoly mindset.
You mean one guy or one entity controlling a bunch of others?
Yes.
Well, there's no question about that. See, it's so big now that... It's like what I was saying about what's his name? Snowden, you know? I mean, what's the point here? Do we really, unless we start attacking the target that if you take it down, you've made some progress, you know, you're pounding it, man. To say that Snowden is somehow doing the good work, you know, is to say that Snowden is somehow fighting the good fight is missing the bigger picture. The bigger picture is he's now become a predictable pawn in a larger game, and that is the game of geopolitics. That's the game of world power versus world power. A man alone is nothing compared to that. And he will say and do what they want him to say and do. Right now he's saying and doing what Russia wants him to say and do. But Russia will eventually get tired of him. They'll be able to get something for him. Well, the same thing here with these companies, you know? Same thing with these companies. One day, the guy's speaking some language on behalf of, Microsoft. The next day, he's talking for Skype. One day, this guy is going to war on behalf of PayPal and eBay. And the next day, he's, you know, got a million and one different things. So it isn't the company. It's the real power of the principles when it comes to this kind of thing.
That's not like America and Russia.
No, America and Russia are the power when it comes to politics. But when it comes to Wall Street, the Silicon Valley, and money, it's the individual, not the company. That's what he's saying. These are individuals. You know, Mark Zuckerberg holds voting control on the board at Facebook. He has voting control. So whatever. He says, Mr. Anderson's appeal is like Goldman Sachs on Wall Street. The whole point of having him on side is the knowledge he derives from the multiple hats that he wears. He wears all kinds of hats. He does all kinds of jobs. He's got all kinds of information. So Icahn is trying to persuade tech companies that plugged-in directors are a bad thing. They may even be an upside for him in Mr. Anderson's continued presence at eBay if the venture capitalists can be persuaded of the merits of offloading PayPal. Having such a big name deal maker on eBay's board could help the activist's wish come true. He could actually be, you know, he could actually be controlling PayPal or controlling eBay. I mean, but he's saying that these guys who are plugged in with all these other different companies are not necessarily working on behalf of you. Oh, you know, get this guy on the board because...
Do you even understand what you're saying?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're all talking about stuff.
Well, I'm finding my way.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I'm finding my way. But Ted Bell is the reason why we do these topics, because eventually we can get Ted on here and he can talk all kinds of smack about all kinds of things, as he will right now. Ted Bell at Ted's of Beverly Hills.
Ted of Beverly Hills.
Come on down here to Ted's of Beverly Hills. Phil, glad to do it for you. Glad to explain the world of money, because I'm Ted Bell, and not that I'm rich, but I'm richer than anybody I'm talking to on this show. I'll tell you that. And also, Phil, one of the things, you know, I didn't mention to you that when you talk about venture capital, what the hell?
God, bud, I'm going to start bleeding from the ears and the nose.
What the hell was that?
That was nothing.
God.
You all right?
Hold on for a minute. Give me some chewing gum, will you? Give me some chewing gum.
What are you...
My ear's just about... All right. Speaking of venture capital, Phil, we were spending a good part of today trying to raise money for an Olympic film, the Sochi Olympics. And because we wanted to celebrate in much the same way, you know, this guy, there's a guy that I don't personally, Bud Greenspan. I know that Bud Greenspan means well. But every time I've ever seen that guy on television with the glasses on top of his head, I have said, I'm going to take him down. I don't know how. I don't know when. Is he still alive?
Bud Greenspan? I don't know.
Because I'd hate to be saying this knowing that the guy is well, even if he's passed on, you know, Mr. Greenspan, all due respect. But you with the glasses on your head. And so, because it's a signature, and I recognize that being Ted Bell, owning Ted's of Beverly Hills, having that steakhouse is good, and having the billboard, I'm Ted Bell, all of the accoutrements, all of the things that say I'm Ted Bell, it ain't good enough when you've got a television show, a couple of movies, and you've got glasses on your bald head, and you're staring into the camera very thoughtfully and saying, well, you know, I'm so busy and I'm always working. That's what the glasses on the head thing says. And you got to know that guy wasn't working 24/7. I bet you that guy was spending most of the time kicking it on a chaise lounge out by a pool. God knows who was bringing him drinks, boy, girl. I don't know. I don't want to think, and I wouldn't want to speculate.
Okay, so where are we going here?
Where are we going here? Here's where we're going. I would like to have my own signature. I would like to have my own signature piece, my own signature statement on the Olympics. I think this is a way for Ted Bell to make his presence and his great love of sport known. The thing that I immediately thought about, because Greenspan has the glasses on top of the head, is I wanted to have a cigarette in my ear. And so, to that end, I don't hear anybody. Does anybody react?
What's that, Ted?
Are you there, Phil?
I'm right here, yeah.
No, all right. I just got told no one reacted to that. All right.
Reacted to what?
I want to have a cigarette in my ear. So when they're interviewing me, I've got a cigarette in my ear.
So you've got a cigarette in your ear, so what?
So I've got a cigarette in my ear, so what? I've got a cigarette in my ear. Never mind.
Is that your signature statement, like Bud Greenspan?
Yes. Bud Greenspan had the glasses on the head. I have a cigarette in my ear.
Is it sticking out of your ear?
Oh, man.
No, Bud. He's got it. It's in the groove of the ear.
Right, where you'd put a pencil.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you mean sticking out of my ear? Why do you let him make those statements? Because right now you've got people going, ha, 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 ha. He's so funny.
Ted, look, you mentioned having a cigarette in your ear, and Bud's not familiar with that.
Oh, the hell he's not. You've never put a cigarette in your ear.
No. Not inside my ear.
Well, you put it in the slot of your ear.
That's when I put it in the slot of my ear. If a guy says, where do you put the cigarette? I go in the ear slot.
In the ear slot.
Yeah, see, even Phil thinks that sounds stupid.
All right, so you've got a cigarette in your ear. We didn't react. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, but we're not going to. You know, I'm not going to belabor the point. I'm not going to have a cigarette sticking in my ear if it doesn't. If it does not give me that. If it's not a signature look, I need something so that when I finally do get on television to talk about the Olympics with the Olympic film that we're planning to make, that we got the funding for. Oh God, am I tired? You know.
So you were out all day today trying to get money up for an Olympic film.
Yeah, well, we got some raw footage shot. We've also got some stock footage. It's really more or less a vanity piece for me, Phil. Something that I can see on ESPN or roll on ESPN Classic so that I am there and I have the cigarette in the ear and I'm speaking in a way that, you know, it gives people an opportunity not just to look at Bud Greenspan. That's all I'm saying.
So this is your effort here is to simply give people, do we need to break, Nikki?
Are you talking to me?
I'm talking.
After.
We need to break, don't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Who are you talking to?
I'm talking to my producer. I'm talking to Nikki at the studio. We have to break, okay?
Well, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, you are trying to take down Bud Greenspan.
I'm not trying to take him down. No, I'm not. I'm trying to give people an alternative to Bud Greenspan with the glasses on top of the head. That's all.
So you think you're going to do that with a cigarette in your ear?
Well, apparently not, because I got one knucklehead that thinks it's sticking out of my ear, and you think it looks gay. So...
I didn't use the word gay. Let's take a very quick break here. Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills talking about raising money, venture capital to do things. His idea, let's make a movie about the 2014 Olympics in Sochi. And at the same time, give people an alternative to Bud Greenspan's glasses on his head. I don't know. We'll be right back. The world famous.
Well, Phil, if you think it sounds weird, get rid of this guy.
It's weird. World famous Phil Hendry Show. World famous Phil Hendry Show. PhilHendryShow.com. What?
What in the name of hell?
What do you call that?
It's a band called O Sleeper.
What do you say?
It's a band called O Sleeper.
Well, you can't. I don't give a damn where you live. I don't care what planet. You can't call that singing.
Yeah, it's of course it's singing.
Oh my God!
I bet you, Jason J. Delmonico's listening to this right now.
Well, what is wrong? Why is he angry? What are you laughing at?
I don't know. The guy's just singing.
If you call that singing, Phil, then I have a penis.
Well, you know.
How dare you?
Hey, turn it down, will you, man? It's just making everybody insane.
That music caused a violent reaction to that woman.
I'll kick his ass.
Hey, watch it, will you? What are you so upset about?
You heard what he said.
Margaret, you led right into that, man. Talk about teeing it up.
Yeah, you said if that's singing, I have a penis.
Yes.
They're a Christian band.
Okay, you weren't on the air. You want to say that again?
They're a Christian band.
If they're Christian, then I just had a vagina installed.
If that's a Christian band, then Jesus is being nailed to a cross yet again as we speak.
That's a Christian band, huh? You are no more the face you paid to the Boston police. I think somewhere along the line, man, they lost the faith. Nah, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I like them. I love it all, man. And I love it now. That's because I use drugs. All right.
Do you really?
No, I do not.
Yeah, you do. You said you smoke weed to help you sleep.
Yeah, I heard
it.
They're a Christian band. Well, what is this? What does that mean, a Christian band? What does that mean, Nikki? When you say a Christian band, what's that mean?
They started out as a Christian band. They actually say that they... Basically, everything they do is characterized by a Christian motivation.
Yeah, I know.
That's
but,
a quote.
Okay, but what is that? What? Oh, huh?
They believe in God and they perform their music for the sake of God.
Well, see, a lot of people believe in God, and a lot of people are Christians.
But they sing about God.
That song was about God. Well, okay. I mean, that's cool. I mean, I can't
understand the lyrics, so I can't comment on that.
There's nothing wrong with, you know, you can, I mean, that's fine, you know.
It looks like they've had some member changes, so they don't necessarily fall under that umbrella anymore, yeah, but they still say that they're motivated by Christianity.
I think some Satanists got into the band there. This is one called Death from Above. this is a great song.
Did they start in with the caterwauling again? That was god-awful and wretched.
You know, if that's a Christian band, then I also had a vagina installed.
You're going to get your ass kicked. Here he is again. Here's our friend again. Now, what verse of the Bible is that? God. There's another thing I
want to
say.
There's a lot of heavy metal Christian bands.
Yeah, I know that.
I have to get you a list.
I know that. I know there's a lot of them. No, metal is not characterized any longer by this umbrella belief that there's some devil influence, you know. But I'll tell you one thing about so-called metal. it's more and more sounding like traditional rock and roll to me. In other words, it doesn't sound so much like heavy metal as it sounds just like good rock and roll, although really polished and professional and obviously very, very well produced now, too, you know?
Yeah.
Because we're a long way from War Pigs. Or, if you will... Yeah. All right, guys, thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow night. And remember, the 15th, we go to a 9 a.m. start time, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.